Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Hello, I'm Kevin Kelton. I'm a writer and a social media political activist living in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a social policy advocate and freelance writer from Kensington, Maryland.
I'm DJ McGuire, a cost estimator and a musician from Suffolk, Virginia.
And I'm Greg Matuszek, a former political activist, a teacher, and someone who's only now one step lower from security clearance than Jared Kushner. Think about that for a second. From Cincinnati, Ohio.
We wanted to begin today with what we think is the big news of the week. Of course, these days, how do you decide what's the big news of the week? There's like five news stories every day that seem like the biggest news of the week. But I think the trade war is where we should begin. Trump, of course, announced his 25% tariff on aluminum brought into the country and 10% on aluminum, 25% on steel. And DJ, my understanding is that you think it's a great move.
Yeah, right. Your understanding is wrong. This is the dumbest economic policy in the history of economics. It is the dumbest economic policy in the history of policy. It is the dumbest economic policy in the history of dumb. I dropped an F-bomb in there. If I dropped an F-bomb, it would have been the dumbest F-bomb economic policy in the history of F-bombs. This is beyond asinine. First of all, you're going to get retaliation from the rest of the world, and in fact, the rest of the world is already threatening retaliation. If your concern is the Chinese Communist Party and what they are doing, China is not even among our top 10 sources of foreign aluminum. They are fourth on our fourth largest foreign source of aluminum. They're not even in the top 10 in our foreign sources of steel. Our largest foreign source of steel and aluminum is Canada, the country next door, one of our strongest allies, and, oh, by the way, our largest source of imported oil these days. So it really is not a good idea to tick them off.
NAFTA partners, doesn't he want to renegotiate NAFTA as well? How willing are they going to be to even sit down with him? Was eager before this.
Yeah, a lot less willing now than they were last week. This is a tax. Yes. On foreign imports. It's a tax on an input. That means higher costs for the automobile industry, higher costs for the construction industry, it's even higher costs for the silverware production industry. Just about everything that requires a container will now deal with higher costs because they either use some form of steel, some form of aluminum, or some form of substitute to either that is now going to be in higher demand as people shift away from steel and aluminum for packaging. Prices will go up in every category of product you can imagine, and also there will be job losses in nearly every industry you can imagine. George W. Bush did this 15 years ago. He did a steel tariff, and more jobs were lost as a result of that than exist in the entire steel industry today. We are literally going to lose a steel industry worth of jobs because Donald Trump doesn't understand international economics.
That's right. It's painful. Just to build on that, there's about 160,000 people who would be directly – or workers who would be directly affected by the price increases in this particular tariff. George Bush's 30% tariff in 2002 cost us some 200,000 jobs
exactly.
In this country. But you know what's the most upsetting part of this is – and it just occurred to me, DJ, and this is going to tick you off even worse – to build a large wall, you need rebar, and rebar is made of steel. We just created for Mexico a higher cost of the wall. The Mexicans must be furious.
But yeah, now Mexico won't negotiate on NAFTA because the wall that they're allegedly going to pay for.
Yeah, they're going to pay for it, so it doesn't matter. You know, I'll disagree with DJ for a second for two reasons on this. One, because Speaker of the House Paul Ryan thinks this is a bad idea also, so I obviously think this is a good idea. Honestly.
Stop clocks are always right twice a day.
That's true. But on top of that, though, And I hate to say that DJ has become one of those East Coast Democratic elitists who doesn't understand us Rust Belt, and that's what I am now.
I'm a
Rust Belt Democrat now. I do declare. And people like Congressman Ohio Representative Tim Ryan. He just tweeted out the other day, China has been eating our lunch for decades. These actions will protect good-paying jobs in Ohio and across the country. And he's right. There's a lot of steel mills. Look, I know you're driving around in your Volvo.
For the first time in my entire life, I am happy to say that Nancy Pelosi defeated him for House Minority Leader. I never thought I'd ever say that. I do.
So let me ask you guys this. We all know that this Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who, boy, he's a real impressive guy. He was one of the driving motivators behind this. Although Trump's been talking about instituting a trade war for at least 2 years. So I guess we can't blame it all on Ross.
But at least two score.
Yeah, he started in the 80s, yeah. Right? Talking about trade.
Yeah. At least. He's wanted trade wars for decades.
Yeah, well, he's...
And now he's going to get one.
He's going to get one. So idiot. What do you think is behind this, DJ? I mean, on some level, he probably believes in the economics of it. I mean, let's give him a little credit for that. But why this week? Why, you know, focused on this particular industry? And what is the political advantage of it, other than appealing to the Rust Belt, which is his base, which obviously he wants to shore up again for 2018 and 2020.
No, that's actually where this begins. It begins with the states that he flipped. It begins with the region he realigned. And it frankly begins with the region that the Democratic Party needs to leave behind if it wants to build a majority. The future is not with the Rust Belt. It's called the Rust Belt for a reason, right? The future is with the states like Florida and Arizona and North Carolina, the states that Trump barely carried because so many Republicans who believe in freer markets and who believe in freer trade held their nose and voted for him because Hillary Clinton really did nothing to appeal to them on economic issues. I've said this before and I'm saying it now. Had Hillary Clinton spent even so much as 5 minutes during that first debate challenging Trump's protectionist nonsense, defending NAFTA and defending freer trade in general, she would be president today. She would have won Florida. She might have won Arizona, North Carolina. She certainly would have won enough Gary Johnson voters to flip to flip the Rust Belt three. But she chose not to do that, and too many Democrats, including Sherrod Brown and Tim Ryan, are willing to follow the siren call of protectionism, and it is dumb policy. As for why Trump did it this week, I think it's a couple things. One, Rob Porter is out, and apparently Rob Porter was responsible for sort of keeping the protectionists at bay and corralling them and keeping them away from Donald Trump so that they weren't the last person Trump talked to. And the other thing was, with everything else that's going around the Trump administration this week, with the Hope Hicks thing, with the
chlamydia?
Jared Kushner.
That's... Sorry, that was a really off-color joke.
Terrible.
Saying
about
there's,
Porter
there's
and...
There's no way to you edit that out, that by one. The way.
which is Kevin's way of saying there's no way I want to edit that out, by the way. That's what he's really saying. But between the Jared Kushner news and everything else, you know, Trump decided to let himself be himself. This was a let Trump be Trump moment. And this is what we get. We have a trade war.
I want to follow up on something you just – well, on a few things you just said, DJ, because I'm going a slightly off base here, but it's something that I've been wanting to ask for a while. You were talking about NAFTA. I personally think that this is a bargaining chip in the NAFTA renegotiation. So my question is, DJ, you said something very interesting. If Hillary Clinton or any Democrat had been able to defend NAFTA better, the outcome of the election might have been different. And my question to everyone here is, why haven't Democrats been able to explain NAFTA and free trade better? And let me just follow that up before you answer. I consider myself an at least averagely smart guy, maybe a little higher than averagely smart. And I think just the way I worded that proves that I'm not really smart. But, but you know, better than average intelligence. I've been following this since 1993 or 4 when you know, the first Clinton actually negotiated NAFTA. And I actually remember in the 92 election when Russ Perot was talking about the giant sucking sound of jobs leaving this country because of NAFTA. So I've been following this issue for 26 years, and I can't tell you whether NAFTA is good or bad. I still don't understand it. So if someone like me, who is fairly informed and follows this stuff, can't tell you what NAFTA is about or why it's a good thing, how can the average Joe or Josephina know? So again, I ask you, why have Democrats been so bad in explaining this issue?
I can say, and it's for a couple of reasons. One, it's not a natural issue for them. The thing about trade protections and trade restrictions is they have what we in economics call concentrated costs and concentrated benefits and diffuse costs, which is to say that the people who benefit from these tariffs, from these trade restrictions, are a small number of people in a certain industry who are very loud about it. The folks who feel the pain are usually consumers who see slightly higher prices on a bunch of things. But that's not as dramatic. That doesn't affect them as much as, say, a dramatic reduction in pay might for somebody working in that industry. So what happens is when a trade restriction is removed through a free trade agreement or a free trade bill, the folks who lose that protection, the folks who lose that government-given advantage, they squawk the loudest because they are affected directly the most. Whereas the 300 million or so of us who would benefit from lower prices don't feel that benefit as much, so we're not as willing to rush and defend it, except for those of us economists who know what that is. It's the reason why the steel tariff had such a dramatic impact was because the steel tariff wasn't felt by consumers directly. It was felt by other businesses directly, and they were more willing to raise their voice because it was an immediate effect on their bottom line. So that's the first thing. Politically, this is harder to do.
I think another reason, and I'm guilty of this also, is Democrats have a historic issue with messaging and branding. We really do not do this well. While Republicans are against, you know, big government, you know, it's hard to say, look someone in the face and say, why, yes, we are for big government. I love saying that, by the way. I am for big government. Republicans are very good in getting their message out in really 10 seconds, boom, boom, boom. This is what we are for. This is what we're against. Democrats just love to talk, and we do, and we talk, and we talk. You can edit out any point where I keep on talking, but that's what we do.
Well, no, it makes sense. Because look at it. We elected a constitutional law professor who could sit there and talk at you for 45 minutes about constitutional law, and then Republicans elected a guy whose campaign slogan was build the wall, or lock her up, right, or something like that. You know, he can get it down to 140 characters, whereas we're basically issuing a college level course in anything.
but that's the problem.
I think his exact motto was lock her up inside the wall.
Yes, lock her right, up inside the wall, which will make America great again.
That was the Republican platform that year.
Or something.
That was it. That encompassed
no,
all
the Republican
their views.
Platform was whatever Vladimir wants.
Speaking of catchy slogans, here's another one that came up this week. White lies matter, because young Hope Hicks, the model turned White House communications director, testified in front of Congress that she does indeed tell little white lies to advance the president's agenda. And I don't think he was too happy with that, because the next day, his agenda didn't include her anymore.
So what white lies, and what does she mean by white? I'm shocked.
That was, you know, I was thinking about that because I've held a lot of jobs, including jobs where I was effectively an assistant to, you know, someone higher up on the food chain in an organization. And like, I may have told lies to the tune of, he's not available right now, when in fact he just didn't want to take the call.
Sure.
But at no time in my employment history has lying for my boss ever been on the agenda. And even my husband, who was a press secretary for congressmen, I don't think lying for his bosses was ever part of that other duties as assigned, you know, part of communications, which is effectively what Hope Hicks does. The fact that she acknowledged lying on behalf of her boss is actually really unusual.
Of course it's unusual. And also, let me point out something. A white lie is, no, those jeans do not make you look fat, okay? Or a white lie is,
Thank you, Kevin. I didn't think they made me look fat either.
Or a white lie is, as Rebecca said, no, my boss can't take the call right now. He's in another meeting or something like that. What Hope Hicks was testifying to, in her mind, and I was going to put an adjective in there, but I didn't want to be called sexist, but in her mind, they might have been lies, but they are indeed lying to the public about matters of national defense and domestic agendas, domestic policy. So these were not white lies that she was admitting to. She was saying the communications director of the White House regularly lies to the public and to the media about the president and the president's policies.
But not about Russia, though. Let's be clear. So,
does anyone here believe that Hope Hicks resigned with no one telling her the president wants your resignation?
Oh, I do.
You believe she just
quit? Yeah, I do too.
The following day.
Yeah, I would say that when Trump called her stupid, it was the straw that broke the camel's back and she decided, F it, I'm out of here.
Right.
I don't agree.
Yeah.
I don't agree. I think he called her stupid and said to John Kelly, tell her her days are over.
Well, but I think she also knew she could make a lot of money on a book contract. Her father is a principal at a major communications and lobbying firm here in town. She's beautiful. She's going to get on television.
Oh, she'll be on Fox News in a minute and a half.
Yeah, the fact that she isn't already on Fox News actually surprises me. She's probably in the makeup chair right now. She's going to be fine. And I think she sat there and after the testimony and weighing all the options and she's gained and lost a couple of boyfriends.
She was fired. She was fired.
I think she was smart enough to get out on her own.
No, and you know what? The story has been that Hope Hicks is the one person in the room when Trump starts to veer off and do his Trumpisms. Like, hey, you know, talk like he wants to talk about guns and things like that. She's been the one to interrupt him or put her hand.
You guys buy everything.
I do. Thank you. Why, yes. And if you have a bridge, I will buy
this. This is a guy that doesn't listen to John McCain or Mitch McConnell. You think Donald Trump gives two whatevers about what Hope Hicks thinks? Beautiful women flatter him.
He stops and listens to what they say because they make him feel good. I think he can be manipulated by women in a way that he cannot be influenced by men. I think the guy thinks with his dick at least 70% of the time.
And John McCain and Mitch McConnell are not his people. Hope Hicks was his people. And in terms of another incentive why Hope Hicks would actually leave without Donald Trump telling her to is she's got to know after that testimony, after showing up in front of the Intelligence Committee, she has to know now she's going to need the money because she's going to need a good lawyer.
Yeah, she is going to need a good lawyer. But, that's true.
But on top of that, I think Rob Porter could also influence him because he was that kind of good-looking guy who could say, hey, you know, and he go, oh, I kind of like the cut of your jib. I think Scaramouche. I think he was the type of guy that Donald Trump goes, hey, I like the way you wear your suit. I'll take a listen to him. So it's not just young, attractive women. I think it's this look that he wants, these model-y type who...
Well, remember, they talked about that when he was filling his cabinet. He wanted people who looked the part. He felt that part of Tillerson's appeal was that he looked like a Secretary of State.
And he liked Gorsuch for the same reason.
Right. Yeah. Which is, what's the word? Terrifying. Terrifying is the word.
Because we're now
putting The Apprentice with America's Top Model, and we get the White House. So if
the president is worried about looks, at least he's walking the walk. Because this week it came out, and I'm going a little off of our agenda here. This week it came out that the president is on a diet. because he too wants to look slim and fabulous for the American public. Did you guys hear about the diet?
No.
You're the only one who seems. Did Rebecca hear about it? I have not heard
about the diet.
Oh, it's true. It is true.
Do you have a secret Trump newsletter that we don't get?
Yeah, secret. I mean, like, no. It's called like, Google. Am I going to open up a fashion magazine and find Donald Trump's diet tips? How to lose 30 pounds by eating McSalad? You know, it's like filled with cut up cheeseburgers and whatever his soda of choice is to wash it down.
I'll tell you how he lost the first 10 pounds. When he went in for his physical. And his doctor, you know, or the nurse put him on the scale and said, Mr. President, you weigh 249 pounds, and that's 9 pounds over the range of obesity for a person your height and weight. He said, oh, no, no, that ain't going public. You put me down under obesity. I don't care what you put on that form. Make sure it is a 1 pound under obesity. And that's what they did.
I'm sorry. I was under the impression that Trump actually lost about 100 to 110 pounds last week.
He did. Hopix.
No. Yeah. I meant his wife. He refused to be seen with him.
I'm sorry. Maybe because Melania won't spend any time with him.
That's what I was going to say. I think I have a theory.
Okay.
I have a theory. One of the reasons that the President of the United States is now so testy and always in a bad mood is because, as we now know pretty much for a fact, this man was philandering on a regular basis with anyone he could get his hands on right up until he entered the White House. And I'm guessing that his romantic affair with Melania Trump is not really all sparks anymore. I don't think this guy is getting laid anymore. Or if he is, he's got somebody or maybe two. I want to use a diplomatic word.
I'm telling you, we should get the DC Madam back in business. We could fix this all. A McFlurry and a Madam will solve all of our national problems.
I think this is why he goes down to Mar-a-Lago every week. I think he's got someone there that he can, you know, leave Melania and she does his thing and he does his thing. But during the work week, he's not getting what he's used to. He's not getting his strange. And I think that is... That is another chink in the armor of the United States.
That is literally the most horrifying image I've ever had in my mind.
Oh my
Donald
gosh.
Trump getting some strange. Jesus.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
But let's get back to politics
let's
and what we do.
Let's get back to it.
Jared, the Kush Kushner... lost his security clearance, his top secret security clearance. And what do you guys think? How long can he last in the White House, you know, without being able to be in the same room with people who are talking about things that he can't hear?
I read somewhere that the White House calligrapher, that there is a White House calligrapher.
Yes, there's a White
security
House
clearance. has higher security clearance than the Kush right now.
A low-hanging parking garage has a higher clearance than he has right now.
And you know what? I'm delighted by all of this. And it's not just his clearance. I mean, the Mueller investigation is looking into his business ties. He allegedly was having meetings with, you know, venture capitalists. And then suddenly, Kushner Companies gets a giant loan from these companies, like Citigroup, through hundreds of millions of dollars at Kushner Companies after sitting down with him. It's just, and there was something about Qatar, which I'm now forgetting, and I'm sure DJ knows chapter and verse.
Kushner is having the
worst week in Washington. I mean, Hope Hicks is having a better week than Jared Kushner.
But doesn't it just make you angry at the idiots who in 2016 were saying how Hillary Clinton was crooked and was cashing in on politics, and they voted for this guy instead with no conception that he was going to do it 10 times worse? It's just unbelievable to me.
I've been angry with those idiots since November of 2016. I don't know why that would change now.
Yeah, Kevin, as frustrated as we I think all are at the Trump voters, one thing that you and I in particular, Kevin, have to remember is that the overwhelming majority of the American people and certainly the overwhelming majority of Trump voters did not grow up in the New York area. So they do not understand that somebody who made their millions off of real estate in New York is corrupt by definition. They don't understand that because they do not understand New York City. You and I do. So this was obvious long before he showed up as a presidential candidate to you and to me. It wasn't as obvious to many of them because they have no concept of how New York City works or how it doesn't work.
They knew what he did with Trump University. You don't have to be a New Yorker and understand the ins and outs of New York real estate to look at that man on television to read about all of the failed businesses, the bankruptcies, the outright scams he ran on thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people, and not come away with realizing that he himself is a con artist. You know, George Carlin had the best line about this. He said, think of the average intelligence of the American voter and then realize that 50% of them are dumber than that.
I mean, but the fact of the matter is that Americans, as a nation, we assign virtue to wealth. We assume that if you are rich, it is because you deserve it, that you are somehow chosen. And we do the same thing with beauty, which is why so many people are quick to defend Hope Hicks, where they're quick to defend, Ivanka Trump. We assume that these are better people because they have something desirable, and that if you've gotten something desirable, that means you deserve it. And in fact, they're just criminals with a bank account.
Well, I know I've skirted on my beauty for most of my career, so.
Oh, yeah, Kevin, you're drop-dead gorgeous, so.
Yes. Folks, please don't look at our publicity pictures. Just take our word for it.
I don't know, your publicity picture, whatever composite you put up recently, Kevin, your eyes look so damn blue in that.
They are. I actually have great blue eyes.
I mean, it is Sinatra-esque.
Jessica, my darling, tells me that all the time. Hi, Jessica. So,
Hi, Jessica.
So, anyways, what were we talking about before I took us away on
Hope Hicks? Jared and Qatar.
Jared Qatar.
Oh, yeah, Qatar. Yeah, Jared.
While my Qatar gently weeps.
Very good, very good. Two things. One, the Citibank thing is another reminder that the 2008 bank bailout was a mistake because Citigroup was one of the prime beneficiaries. And now they are handing out loans to the presidential son-in-law. The other thing regarding Qatar, I don't know how much of the American policy against Qatar was Jared Kushner not getting a loan from Qatari higher-ups as much as it was Donald Trump's rather bizarre and dangerous fascination with Saudi Arabia, which was arguing with Qatar over certain things. So I'm not necessarily going to blame Jared Kushner for that per se, or just automatically assume it was because Jared Kushner.
Blame him.
Blame the Kush.
But it's certainly,
everyone's doing it.
At the very least,
cool kids are blaming Jared Kushner for shit.
At the very least, right. It looks bad.
Yeah, if you ask me, Jared from the White House should get a jail cell with Jared from Subway. I mean, it would be. And this way the guards would just have to say, Jared, and they would both look up, and they'd be like, hey, it's time for your daily beatings.
So, DJ, you're the only one now who hasn't made a tasteless joke.
Oh, I thought that was in good taste. I mean, comparing a child molester with
Jared Kushner,
with the guy who used to sell subs. I guess I did make a tasteless joke. Jared Kushner is not a child molester that we can prove.
Moving on, you know who's not a democratically leaning type person? It's dictators from China. And apparently this week the president at a fundraiser made a joke about the fact that the president, is it Xi? Am I pronouncing that right?
Xi Jinping.
President.
That's correct.
Xi Jinping. Okay, I can't pronounce Chinese names. President Xi Jinping has changed the campaign laws or the laws of China in some way that will allow him.
The Constitution.
Yes, the Constitution, if they have one. That will allow him to be the leader there for life, if he so chooses. And Trump made a joke that he thought it was an interesting idea and one that we should maybe consider here. Now, I think the president.
And he also said Xi Jinping is great. He called Xi Jinping, who is a dictator for an authoritarian regime, he called him great.
Right. That alone is a
startling and horrible statement. He called this guy great.
Right.
Because that would be like calling Hitler great. Well, maybe not Hitler. It would be
not
like
Hitler.
Calling
Brezhnev
great.
Let's go with Brezhnev.
Brezhnev great. Yes,
Let's go with Brezhnev.
I like Ferdinand Marcos as a dictator. He was one of my faves.
Okay, let's start with column A. Okay, as far as the joke, as far as the you know, I think we should look into it. He said it in a closed room of benefactors.
It was clearly
I honestly see that as a joke. Yeah. I see that as it's not funny. But you know what? 99% of the things that we thought, you know, if you ask who is the funniest president ever, like three of us in this podcast will obviously say, well, gosh, President Obama had this great sense of humor and his delivery was so wonderful. But I know people who will actually say, oh my gosh, he thought he was funny. Oh no, nothing he said was funny at all. And the way he would say things was so, oh gosh, I think we have to
give the president the benefit of the doubt on this one.
Yeah,
I actually thought it was a decent line. I mean, you're talking to your people, you know, what happened. And since he'll be lucky if he serves one full term, I'm not worried about him being president for life. It is the other part of it where, as you said, he has this tendency to praise the dictators of countries that he's at odds with. I mean, this week he apparently is instituting tariffs to punish China, and at the same time he's praising the guy who's, you know, condoning or creating the behavior that he wants to punish. So go explain that to me.
He's an idiot. Because, explanation. He's done with a box of rocks. Yeah.
Well, I think we talk about this all the time. His policy is the last person who talks to him. So someone wrote a thing.
So who was talking to him and saying Xi Jinping is great? Who else thinks that?
He doesn't understand. So he's like, yeah, this guy's great. He's got, I think DJ said, I use this line all the time because I steal stuff from DJ to make myself sound smarter. Donald Trump is a 60s kind of guy. He says things like, this guy's great. This cat is a swinger. This chick is wonderful. You know, the blacks. And he says all sorts of things that even my father wouldn't say, because my father's not a 60s kind of guy. My father's like a 70s or 80s kind of guy. But he says things like grandparents would say. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he says things like, hey, this guy's great. You know, let's move on. But he doesn't actually understand policy. So he waits till someone else says it. He uses racial terms that no one in the last 50 years understands. Because that's what he kind of doesn't really understand. Now, is he right? No, of course not.
But here's my take on Trump. He can be angry at China, although he'll always say, hey, I think they're doing the right thing. They should be trying to take advantage of us. So at least he understands paradox. But he could be angry at China and their policies, but he is charmed by individuals. So when he meets someone like Ping, or whatever his stupid name is, and they have their, you know, their lovely chocolate cake in Mar-a-Lago, he gets charmed by these people, and he forgets that this is the guy leading the country that he doesn't like. That's, to me, the disconnect in the Donald Trump mind.
What it's driven by is that he sees countries as businesses. So he just sees everybody as somebody who could be a rival today and then a business partner tomorrow. He doesn't understand geopolitics. He doesn't understand the interest that other nations have, because he assumes everything is negotiable, because in New York real estate, not only is everything negotiable, but they lie about the square footage that's in an office building. If the square footage in an office building, which last I checked was pretty well set in steel, if that's negotiable, everything is negotiable. He doesn't understand that in geopolitics, certain things are not negotiable. He doesn't understand that in geopolitics, you can't always split the difference. He doesn't understand that in geopolitics, there are certain people or there are certain governments or certain countries that have principles on which they will not budge. So he just doesn't understand any of this. So when he thinks that these tariffs that he's threatening on everybody is going to convince everybody to come by and say, oh, well, we didn't know America was so tough. Yes, now we'll make a deal. That's not the way democracies work, and it's certainly not the way totalitarian regimes work. So he just has no idea of anything and anyone outside of his small, cloistered, deeply corrupted universe that he stepped out of to run for president. He thinks it's all just like the guy who owns the building next door, and it isn't.
Which is a long, more intelligent way of saying what I said, which is that he's an idiot. But he's also incurious. He doesn't care to learn that things are different than his perceptions.
You know, people are going to listen to this show and get the opinion that we all don't like the president.
Wow.
I think they got that impression a long time ago.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it. You know, something in the news that actually isn't directly linked to Donald Trump, which is the West Virginia teacher strike, which has been going on now for how long? Greg, you're a teacher, you know.
So the teacher strike's been going on since February 22nd, and the teachers are striking for, I believe, a pay raise, which they have not received for many years. And I think rightfully so. And I'm for unions. Teachers' unions.
Wait, hold on a second. I think you might have misspoke. You're not saying rightfully so that they didn't get a pay raise for many years.
No. No, did that come out wrong? I'm sorry. No, I think they should be able to strike, and I think that they should get a pay raise. I think unions have that right. I know it's controversial that public officials and public employees can strike. No. This is what they should do. They've gone to the table. I know there were some shenanigans Saturday night. The wrong bill was passed, and then they had to go back and strike it, which is ridiculous.
I'm going to give the West Virginia legislature a bit of a pass on that for two reasons. Number one,
why don't you explain it real quick? What happened was
that the West Virginia House passed a bill granting a 5% pay raise to teachers and police officers, I believe, and some other narrowly defined public employees. The Senate committee apparently came up with a bill that would give a 4% pay raise to all state employees, including many that the House did not consider. And the Senate just got their bills confused. So they passed the House version, and then they went back and said, oh, no, let's do a motion to reconsider. They reconsidered it, and then they passed their own version. Considering we have seen a United States Congress attempt to override a presidential veto on a farm bill 10 years ago and actually pass the wrong bill and have to do it all over again 2 weeks later, I'm going to give the West Virginia legislature a pass here.
DJ is totally tickling my memory about this. President Bush vetoed the it was the 2008 farm bill, but right. I think it happened in 2009. And my husband was working on the Ag Committee at the time, so I remember all this. And I just texted him about it. And what it was the override was done on a bill the president vetoed the wrong bill. It was sent to the president on parchment. That's statutorily required that it has to be printed on this very fancy paper. And it was sent to the president missing an entire title, just like a title of the bill was missing. It didn't get printed out and added to this parchment copy. And then it came back for the veto override, but it was the wrong bill. So they had to pass the bill again, send it back to the president. He vetoed it again on the correct parchment, and then it was overridden again.
Yeah.
And it was literally a printing error. And I was asking my husband, I'm like, what did the chairman say? It was Congressman Colin Peterson was the chairman. He's like, I don't know. I wasn't in the room. I wish I had been. But I know that Colin swears and Nancy Pelosi, who was speaker at the time, doesn't. So I'm guessing Colin did all the swearing about that when this happened. But that's some of the best congressional trivia, because that is the only bill that's been vetoed twice by the same president.
Right. So if we can have a federal Congress send the wrong bill to the president and have that stuff Washington for about 2 to 3 weeks, the fact that the West Virginia legislature had to take a hiccup for a night, that's not so big a deal.
Yeah, a higher level of efficiency in West Virginia than in Washington. But I just love that it's a printing error and it had to do with getting stuff printed on the right kind of paper.
Yeah, well, that's easier to do in West Virginia because they're all family.
Oh, no. Oh,
there it is. I was waiting for DJ to land the inappropriate joke. So it's a clean sweep. We've all made one now.
And I think Virginians are actually statutorily required to make West Virginia jokes at least once a quarter.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's a geography thing.
I'm well behind on my quota.
So we want to thank you for listening to this rambling almost 1 hour of us talking about things political and non-political. Please follow us on Twitter at #NPUPodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast. And share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well and maybe become avid or rabid fans of the show.
Because we've lost all our other fans.
We want to thank Alan Keeney for our new theme song and Ian Patrick Shannon for our nifty website, MorePerfectUnionPodcast.com. Please go check it out. And we want to thank Tracy Bagatelle Black for helping us promote the NPU podcast on social media. And if you would like to debate with us between shows, we're all, or mostly all, Rebecca, hint, hint, we're all in a political group on Facebook called Open Fire Politics. We're there between shows, and we'd love to see you there, too, and hear what you have to say about what's going on in the world. And with that, any final thoughts for the week to come?
What about a president that does curling? I mean, that seems like... awesome.
That would be so great if every Saturday the president was out on an ice rink curling with other people.
Right, and it seems like a sport like anyone can do. I mean, right? I mean, I think.